Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz, live from Tokyo.
Yeah, you wish. Or you wish no. Not.
Yeah, no kidding. Actually, I spoke to a few people in that neck of the woods today and yesterday, and they didn't have much to say about what was going on, and just everybody's in a tizzy.
It's a place I would want to avoid at the moment. And yeah. It's like, by the way, today's March 15th for anyone keeping track. Did you see the piles of rubble when these guys walking through? I mean, it's just astonishing. And I saw one amazing picture of a full blown, a big giant tourist bus sitting on top of a 3-story building.
Wow.
Just sitting up there. And the other thing that I noticed, and actually my wife first noticed it, those cars in Japan are so well made that they're all bobbing up and down. They're all floating.
It's those tires. We got to have sinking tires. This happens in all sorts of flood situations too. You know, cars just get swept away because the tires, it makes it buoyant.
Oh boy, that's bull crap. Is the cars themselves are sealed tight. Those Japanese cars are sealed tight. They're just bobbing all over the place. I mean, I've never seen anything quite like it.
I'm going to give somebody the idea to like go over the Niagara Falls in one of those things.
I'm not giving anybody any ideas. I'm just saying they float.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think it's the tires.
And also, I guess there's still a couple of trains missing.
Yeah. And the other problem is that the mud has now been compressed and is so cold in some of the regions that the sediment from the tsunami, which is really what caused all the problems, obviously, is just buried things, and it, you know, it's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate. I mean, not to get really disgusting and gross about this, but I mean, essentially, this is what happened over history, where, you know, layers upon layers upon layers of different civilizations and animals and trees and vegetation get compressed under a variety of different, you know, natural disasters, or just, you know, over millions of years. And that's how we got oil. I mean, seriously, right? I mean, we got this oil from the compression of all this stuff over time, and if you got to dig down, it's kind of like the same thing. It's pretty sad.
So what has it done for the markets?
It doesn't look
that good, but I it's not collapsing in any real way, but I see how's the Standard & Poor's look like it was taking a hit?
It took a hit last night overnight. The Standard & Poor's futures were down about 35 points overnight when the Nikkei was down about 12%. And Nikkei kept falling down about 14%, and then it came back to only end down 10% after 10% the day before. And this is when the Prime Minister came out and started talking about how there was radiation that was becoming evident in Tokyo, Osaka, and people just freaked out. And, you know, this it's a bigger global issue. There's so many of the pundits on TV are playing this down. And I'm not going to tell you it's a
or playing disaster.
What I mean by that is they're playing it down, that they say that this is not going to have any effect on the U.S. economy.
You mean the whole thing. I thought you mean they were playing down or playing up or down the nuclear thing. No. They seem to be playing that up.
But they're saying that it's not going to really cause any problems. By the way, this
How
is on
that
the back.
Be?
Well, let me just tell you one more thing. Also, this is on the back of the Middle East issues not going to have any significant impact, and oil prices at $105 or so not having an impact, on top of the fact that there's no impact on our economy due to the austerity programs in Europe. So basically, to sum it all up, it doesn't matter what happens anyway, anywhere, at any level, because it doesn't matter to our economy somehow.
Well, I guess if the market is rigged, I guess that would be true.
Well, but aside from the market, what about the fact that, you know, the amount of electronics that come out of Japan? What about the fact that, you know, you have oil at these levels? And what about the fact that NAND chips already are a 30% premium to where they were because of a supply shortfall? What about the fact that consumption in Japan may be a big concern moving forward? Look at Tiffany and Coach, what happened to those stocks? And, you know, there's something that is, I think, very wrong with these mouths that just can't shut up for 5 minutes on TV about only looking at the potential benefit. For example, let me throw something at you here. The word these days is, you need to hold on for this one, okay? That this earthquake is actually going to be a net positive to the economics of not only Japan but the world. Because this is a good thing. Because this is going to be almost like a Mother Nature's stimulus package for, dare I say, shovel-ready jobs and for infrastructure development.
Why don't we just have World War III then by this logic?
Yeah. I mean, this is pure Keynesian thinking, right? So what you do is you want to make a mess so somebody cleans it. You know, even if you don't want to make a mess, make the mess because then somebody can clean it. The somebody that cleans it is getting paid to do so. And then they can buy some new shirts and things of that nature. I mean, you know, the money has to come from somewhere. I mean, right? Or it doesn't?
I guess not this logic.
Well, already Japan has pumped in about $125 billion into the markets in the last couple of days, plus another, I think, $10 or $20 billion today to keep the money market stable and to make sure that things go. Don't forget, Japan also has the ability to buy directly the companies within their stock exchange. We all know this. If things get out of hand, they will buy the companies on their stock exchange. So what's the point?
I don't know.
What's the point? Is there any, you know, if things can't go down, we can look at it two ways. If things can't go down, great. So to be an investor is wonderful. Just play along with the game. But on the other hand, isn't there something to be said about the idea that you want to find the best companies out there and you know, sort of the Darwinian thesis of company evolution, that the survival of the fittest, or just any piece of crap company gets to live on in infamy because they're a public company?
You know, the whole thing I think is going to come to I think this is just a fool's paradise. Did you see the latest newsletter? I think it came out today from Shadow Stats.
No, I didn't see it. What did they say? That bad, huh?
What? It was depressing.
What was
in
that?
In fact, not depressing. It's depression. Yeah, they claim that we're in the depression has been long since triggered, and of course they have their typical their unemployment numbers, the real ones, are just basically frozen at about 23%.
Yeah. Well, we talked about this. The last month's employment numbers that came out, where we saw an 8.9%, which was a drop, and somewhat better hiring. You have to remember something, that the 8.9%, what everybody focuses on, is easily explained to the fact that we have less and less people working and therefore less people counted that aren't working.
Right.
So the pool, it's just the whole thing is a giant game. It's a confidence game is what it is. In the truest of terms.
That's actually why I like Shadow Stats and their news. They have a newsletter. People should check it out. It's $175, I think. It's not that expensive.
Yeah,
and
I tried to get him on my podcast. I don't know. I emailed him a couple of times and called him.
He's over here in San Francisco. This guy.
Well, go knock on his door for me, will you?
I might go over and visit him.
Yeah, bring him a bottle of wine, and you know, because you know that. Just to segue into this point here, did you see this news that the U.S. has overtaken France as the number one buyer of wines in the world? Where is that? I put that on our list here somewhere.
I didn't see that on the list.
Yeah, it's somewhere here. Maybe I just put it into the, you know, we have these delicious tags. So if you go to the website, dhunplugged.com, you could find, or you could just look up DH Unplugged on Delicious. We have all these different things that during the week, if it's related to the show, I will kind of link it up there. Yeah, but there is it's somewhere on the story. I don't see it on our list. But yes, we've overtaken France as the number one buyer of wines.
Well, we have a population that's probably, what, 7 times more than France?
Yeah,
and the French have been going through a kind of an anti-alcohol binge in the country, which has irked most of the winemakers.
Yeah,
they have billboards, and they're trying to keep people from drinking at all, let alone drink wine. And so, it's just interesting. It's a little surprising because the French used to be a lifestyle thing, and now it's slightly disappearing. It'll come back.
Maybe it's the austerity program. They're not allowed to.
Yeah, right.
No, I don't think so. Anyway, let's give a quick plug to something that is really important because it's only about, I think, two or three weeks till this is towards the end. But I'm doing some work for the Jason Taylor Foundation, the Reading Room down in Miami, and he's another one that he's looking to put on. it helps kids, you know, that maybe are underprivileged, go to a place, have some reading and help for after school. Also gives them some great skills. They have like a basketball program, a DJ program, some art programs, but it's just a great program. You may know Jason Taylor from the Dolphins and the Jets. Super. Oh, by the way, in Dancing with the Stars, I last time I saw him, I said, Jason, you know, bust a move here. And he kind of, I'm not sure if this was a highlight of his life or not, the whole thing. But if you could do me a favor, please, I'd really appreciate it, is to donate. All you have to do is go to DH Unplugged. There's a little button there that says Jason Taylor Foundation. If you $25, $50, $100, if you send $100, I'll give you a copy of either The Winning Investor or The Disciplined Investor. And it would mean a lot to me, and I know it would probably mean a lot to John.
Absolutely. I think this is one of the better ideas we've had to just turn the show into a
charity fest.
Charity fest. Why not?
Yeah.
And it's like it's good. It's a good use of this money.
Yeah.
And by the way, the getting an autograph from Horowitz is like worth its weight in gold. He's very stingy about these things. he's like Pete Rose and some of these other, you know, baseball guys. They won't do it unless you pay them.
I had my cousins were here recently and they wanted a copy of my book, and I don't know what to say, but it was strange. They wanted me to autograph the book for them, and I was a bit taken back. I didn't know what to say. It seemed odd to me. I've known them since I was a child, and they want my autograph and something written in the book.
That's the way they know they could dump it at the used bookstore with a little extra cash for
the
autograph.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
That's why you have to personalize it.
Right. Anyway, let's just finish up. Jason Taylor Foundation, go to DH Unplugged or thedisciplinedinvestor.com and just please give till it feels good, whatever it may be. And I know that we can get around to things and all that, but just put it on pause for a second. Head over there. You can pay with a credit card and give a couple of bucks to the Jason Taylor Foundation. I do want to spend a little time with you, John, talking about the whole the Japan issue, because so much came, you know, there's so much going on there, and it's almost, you know, it's scary because we had so many contradictory discussions that you hear about. Okay, do we have radiation leakage? Do we not have radiation leakage? You know, how many people have died? How many people, you know, is it in Tokyo? What's the power situation? What's going to be? It is amazing that already, just 2 days after this, where there is some leakage, there's some exposed cores, and I put a link, by the way, in the DH Unplugged where you can see an interactive map of which particular areas are, you know, what power plants are hit and what the problems are, and it gives you kind of a walkthrough. So if you want to check that out. But already we're finding there's a hubbub in the U.S. about nuclear plants. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I know. It's just like, you know, this is the kind of the nature of a panicky, uneducated population. And yeah, now they just had it today. They had apparently some congressional hearings on the topic. And I guess Georgia's been expanding one of their plants down in Georgia somewhere, and everyone's all upset about it. Oh, we can't do that. It's too dangerous to what we have. And it's just, like, ridiculous. And I guess, of course, the uranium mining companies are all sunk.
Yeah, that's not good. But you know what? We're trying to get our government in the United States on budget. And it seems like no matter what happens, there's always a reason to postpone that discussion. Like, all of a sudden, we have to come up with – because there was an incident over there with a horrible earthquake and a tsunami that potentially a installation in Georgia, not near the coast or near any earthquake or any other natural disaster zones, may have a concern about their nuclear plant.
Yeah.
It's kind of stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, it is stupid.
Already Germany is idling 7 of their plants.
Why?
That they had.
They were working fine. Probably turning them on and off and on and off is probably not a good idea.
Yeah, right. Like a fluorescent bulb. You know, you don't want to do that. Once you turn it on, leave it. Because they're concerned about the workmanship and the safety of those that were built in the 70s, and, you know, the same vintage as the ones that were in Japan, which were, I think, put together by GE and a few other groups. So yeah, GE stock is feeling the pain.
Yeah, GE is the company responsible. But, you know, the way it's being described, you know, for one thing, a meltdown, I think people don't even know what that means.
Yeah, why don't you talk about that? Because I think the word meltdown starts getting everybody very
upset. Well, they think it's going to blow, the same as exploding. A meltdown means that the elements within the reactor melt and form a big gob that ends up getting sealed off and is not usable. or recoverable, and essentially entombs the reactor. The only thing you can really do with it is you have to close it. It's a big waste of money is right. what it really amounts to. But it doesn't mean it's going to blow up or anything.
And well, the problem is not twofold. Number one, 25% of Japan's power comes from, I think, these various
reactors.
Reactors that are a problem. Second of all, if it does melt down, if it's contained, it's not a problem. The problem is if it's exposed and there's radiation leaks. That's the big problem.
Yeah, but the way these things are engineered is pretty hard for that to happen. Now, there has been some apparent in some of the storage areas, there has been some issues which caused a radiation leak appear, but a minor one. But, you know, this is all supposition and talking heads, and it's embarrassing to watch it, and especially the local news about it. Can it happen here? What are we going to do? Is the radiation, if it blows up, will the radiation get to California? I mean, there's one report on whether the radiation, as if this thing is a bomb, is going to somehow get to California. People long since apparently forgetting that in the 50s in particular, and I guess in the early 60s perhaps, we were detonating these nukes in Nevada within the boundaries of the United States and off some islands in the middle of the Pacific, much closer. And these are huge monster blasts that are nothing like, even if it was possible for one of those reactors to blow up, which is pretty impossible. I mean, it can melt down but not blow up. And there was radiation that got all over the place. And, you know, we had strontium 90 issues in the milk, and everyone had to talk about that. And if that wasn't going to kill us, how is this going to have any effect whatsoever? It's mystifying to me that they play this up and the old ladies are wringing their hands.
Right. Yeah, exactly. What are we going to do? Where are we going to go? Nowhere is safe. I mean, I think there is, though, some radiation issues. First of all, I do truly believe that no matter what is really happening, there is no way on this earth that the Japanese government will release the real information, because they know it will just panic the crap out of people. And I believe that in the beginning they knew there were problems, but they said there's no problem. And they'll keep saying that until they're forced to, for some reason, either evacuate, which they've done, or there's some bigger issue that really becomes well known. If they can keep this thing bottled up in terms of the news, they will, which is probably one of the reasons they evacuated, so no news people can get in there.
Well, that could be. That's a pretty funny idea.
You know, I mean, you know, don't come here. Nope. You don't want to be here. Lots of radiation. You know, no. People don't want to be there.
We're just going to have to watch and see what happens.
Yeah, but there is some radiation levels in Tokyo already, in Osaka, that are bigger. So, on the heels of Germany getting all in a flutter, and then all here, you know, us postponing our budget for another 2 or 3 weeks. On this, because we have to talk about the safety of something that's, you know, that's not there. And obviously, you know, next we'll be talking about, you know, the Congress will take up, like, you know, the migration of geese, you know, as a major issue. So the bottom line is that, all right, hold on. Breaking news. You know, I got the CNBC app. Breaking news, the government radiation is starting to fall. Now, I wonder if that means that radiation is falling from the sky.
Or
its numbers are falling. I will, you know, they'll probably restate that because...
poorly written.
Yeah, poorly written. Radiation started to fall after 10:54 a.m. Tokyo time. So that's the radiation is falling, which I assume means that it's better.
Yeah, so well, how does that work, since radiation doesn't get better? What it says to me is that the first numbers were bogus.
Yeah.
Says,
The second numbers are bogus. However you want to look at
it. One of the two. Something's bogus.
Well, at the end of the day, it's all about the financial markets. Let's be honest.
Well, for you, for sure.
No, not for me.
Yeah, for you. For me, it's like what I cooked for dinner.
No. I mean, for Japan, they before they can say anything about the earthquake and all that, already, before they could talk about potential cleanup or potential problems or potential, you know, anything, getting food out, they said, we will put $125 billion into the market to maintain the market's you know, ability to function by Monday. This was like Saturday. It's like, wait a minute. You know, that's the old, hey, my uncle died. Isn't it terrible? By the way, do you have the will?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, right?
Yeah.
That's how it goes. It's money.
Yeah, my
first
wife died on this vacation, and it rained all the time.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, so it's what's going on. So the companies like Cameco, CCJ dropped 10% or 15% yesterday. They came back a little, dropped 17% today, then came all the way back up when all the talking heads said, hey, nobody's stopping their programs. Everything's fine. Don't worry about it. Of course, then, you know, they have a announcement in Germany that they are, in fact, going to, you know, slow down. Even if there is no radiation problems, the fact is that the amount of damage that has gone on will be a very difficult thing for Japan to reroute the electricity and to get their factories and all that up and running again for some time. This is not a three-day thing where you just put an extension cord from, you know, from Tokyo down to Osaka and everything's fine.
Yeah, no, this is going to take probably a couple of years before they really get it back to normal. And it will be at least a 2 or 3 months before they even can, you know, start cranking things up again. It seems to me. Now, what does that mean for the yen?
Well, funny that you should ask that. Because what would you think would happen to the yen?
It would seem logical.
Yeah.
That the yen would, you know, start to fall because of the situation.
This is why logic never works. The yen is rising. Now, let's just back it up. It would seem logical that a country that's having a situation like this and the government that is creating $125, $150 billion out of thin air to pump into the markets where they have a debt to GDP already, the government debt at a state of about 175%, only second to Zimbabwe, by the way, in the world. I don't know if you know that.
No, I did not know that.
Yep. There's
well,
a
that's
little,
not a good number. You don't want that.
No, that's not good. We have a problem, and we have Ron Paul and all these guys brewing about this, and we're at 65%. Hmm. So why would the yen rise? Well, the first idea is, well, it's a rush to safety. Well, wait a minute. Why wouldn't you rush to the dollar? Because nobody seems to be rushing at all to the dollar. As a matter of fact, it's going the other way.
Right.
The yen has been rising. Here's why, what we figured out. There's going to be a tremendous amount in the multi-billions of dollars of money that's going to have to be spent by industry and insurance companies and reinsurance companies to pay for some of this damage. They can't pay for it in Swiss franc or dollars. They have to pay for it in yen. So what's happened over the last several days when you see all these commodities getting really hammered is that between the commodities and the financial assets, et cetera, and other currencies, things are being sold left and right and being put into yen, repatriated in order to actually have the money there in order to pay the things that they need to be paid. Same thing with Japanese citizens. You know, they also need to bring money back also into yen so they could spend it. So there's a gigantic repatriation trade going on right now.
Wow.
Pretty
well,
wild,
that's
huh?
a logic that I would have never come up with.
Yeah. So because if, you know, logic would tell you that if you move a car backwards, you should be saving energy. But it's, you know, it's not, right? You know what I'm saying? It's you know, logic doesn't work when it comes to markets. And the fact is that you would think that, again, the argument that this is going to be great for GDP and great for, you know, could this be the final resurgence of the Japanese markets? You know, the Japanese markets, if you look at the Nikkei, is down 65%. From 20 years ago where it was.
Yeah. No, it did that one collapse and never recovered.
Never recovered. And they have had deflation ever since. Their unemployment rate for there is high. Their property prices never came back. And this is all because of a gigantic bust in their industry, an aging population, and a housing bust. Who does that sound like?
You know, it sounds like us.
Yeah. Yeah. We're on the same exact track, and we've obviously borrowed their book on how to effectively get themselves out of this.
Well, if you remember in the 80s, a lot of people were saying we should emulate the Japanese.
Yeah, we were turning Japanese. There was a song about that.
Well, yeah.
They bought Rockefeller Center. People were freaking out about that. They bought Pebble Beach golf course out there. People were freaking out about that. And it was like, oh my God, they're taking over. But in the end, we don't care whether it's the Middle East and deficits, Japan, Europe, inflation. Markets are down for a few minutes in the morning, and they come right back up. We care for 5 minutes, and then we just pump money right in, because the Federal Reserve comes out and says, "Hey, there is a much more solid footing of the economic recovery." This happens at 2:15 today, and they're going to continue on with their bond buying. So everybody got all happy. Now, usually what would happen is that if the Fed said, hey, things are much better right now, they would say, wait a minute, are they going to start tightening rates? Well, you know, if it's getting better, are they going to be the end of their stimulus? But no, the Fed just keeps on throwing money into the markets no matter what. This is why the U.S. dollar keeps moving down.
Well, what goes down must come up, I would hope.
Yeah. Yep, yep, yep. So let's talk about one other interesting development from all this. So the selling off, back to the logic, the selling off the uranium stocks when that may or may not be the right thing to do. They're selling off much of the oil. They're maybe starting to finally raise natural gas pricing because they think there's going to be a big move for that as an alternative. Coal may start moving. And lo and behold, the solars that everybody hated 2 weeks ago are on fire. So
what stock specifically?
Well, look at TSL, Trina Solar, which I like actually as a company. We got stopped out of it. We may eventually get back into it, but if it forms a decent pattern. But, you know,
TSL,
Trina Solar. Hmm. Up what, 8% today? Up 7.5% yesterday?
Let's go take a look at the charts.
Yeah, to the charts we go.
Oh, by the way, on the last show, I want to do a make good. I interrupted you.
You did?
Yeah. And, well, I mean, it's something I do, but I don't mean to. I interrupted you because I listened to the show a second time, and I interrupted you in mid-sentence. Or no, it's actually when I was editing it. I interrupted you in mid-sentence. You said, there are two things you should look at when you look at charts.
Oh.
And then you said something about the one day. And then I said, well, what, because I saw something and I was pointing it out, and then you never got back to this. So if I'm looking at a chart for the first time, I'm looking at Trina Solar, which went up quite a bit today. Mm-hmm. It's up to 28.28. I grabbed this chart, and what are the two things I'm supposed to look at?
Well, you know, you did interrupt me, and I'm glad you apologized, but now I'm mad and I'm not telling you. You should be looking at the daily chart, but I like to start oftentimes with the weekly chart because the weekly chart gives you a little bit of a smoother look.
The 5-day?
It's called weekly. I don't know. It's called a weekly.
It's called a 5-day on the Yahoo.
No. I don't want you to see a 5-day of a daily. I want you to see the weekly. So where are you looking? You're at Yahoo?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You're at Yahoo.com. Let me go. Let's do this together. We're going to do this as
the weekly.
We're going to do a thing. Yeah, let's see. Trina Solar. Okay. So let's see what we got here. On Trina Solar.
I look at basic tech analysis, which gives me the.
I think you have to customize the chart, right? We're going to that chart there. I'm clicking.
Are you in basic chart or basic tech analysis chart?
I don't know. I'm about to look. It's coming up. Okay. I am in interactive. I think it's, I don't know what I am. Basic charts. Let's see what this says.
This
looks like a daily chart. It looks like a daily chart. Chart settings. Let's see what that says. Line type, handle line, scale, cursor. Yeah, this is not good. There's all daily here.
Well,
huh?
Go hit the basic tech analysis. It's got more versatility.
All right, let's take a look. Uh-huh. And it looks like it has a day indicate. Yeah, this is not good. This sucks.
So this sucks.
Sucks. So, I can't believe you can't do it this way. That's terrible. You can only see a daily chart. How stupid is that?
There you go.
That's really stupid. Okay. There's actually two ways to look at it. It's linear, and I can't believe you can't look at a weekly chart. How silly is that?
Well, maybe they can. That we just don't know.
I'm looking. I don't see it. I would usually see this because I'd be using a lot of programs like this. But maybe I'm wrong. If anybody knows that I'm wrong,
okay. Well, let's go to stock. Know. Was it stock?
Wait. There's something called interactive charts. What does that do?
Oh, it just lets a ball bounce around.
Chart setting, yeah, the same one I did here, right? Technical indicators, simple, no. Compare events, no. Splits, divot, no. And then there's the basic chart, which the basic chart must be really bad. Basic chart is the same thing as the advanced chart with nothing on it.
Exactly.
And you can edit it, which probably takes you to the, and I got to do that. Go to stockcharts.com.
All right. Do it right.
Now, I'm logged in because I have a membership. But I am going to log out and see what it looks like for you. I'm logged out, so I'm going to put in TSL there on the side.
Create a chart. Where do you put it? Oh, there it is.
On the right-hand side, yeah.
Symbol. TSL.
Yep.
Okay.
So it's going to come up with a white chart with a bunch of colors on it, right?
Yeah.
All right. Now click down where it says symbol TSL periods right next to it. Say weekly.
Symbol TSL. Where is this again?
Above the chart to the left.
Oh, daily. Okay, daily, weekly. Boom. Okay.
Okay, forget about all the other things on there. Just look at the chart itself and the volume.
It's, okay, we can now get rid of the weekly.
So you can see, for example, on the TSL, one of the interesting things is that if you some of the settings that are automatically set, you have a 50-week here. I don't really like the 50-week, but that's an interesting thing to look at. I like to change it, if I can, to a 10-week. So on the bottom, you go a little bit lower where it says the chart attributes, and it says simple moving average there on the overlays, and change that to 10 and then push the update.
Simple moving average 10.
Yep.
And then
now, the other thing that you're looking at here is you realize you're looking at a logarithmic chart. You see how the distance between the 5 and the 10, which is a two times, is the same distance. You got to look at the distances as, let's say, 10 to 20, for example.
Right.
So this, you look at this weekly on a logarithmic basis, and you can see that the trend has been, generally speaking, that it stays above its 10-week. Once it pops down below its 10-week, it's an ugly situation, and then it comes back up and it holds it nicely. You know, generally speaking, you know, when it goes below, it's in a bad situation. 10-week is just the same as a 200-day moving average. But you can see this chart. It has, it's obviously up and down, you see that. But you can see the longer-term period. Every bar is one full week, 5 days worth of trading, the highs and the low there. Okay, so you're looking this back to 09. So you can see kind of a longer period. It smooths out the returns. It shows you the volatility, which this has some volatility in it. Now, if you switch back now to the daily, let's just go back to the daily. Just change the daily and update. A much shorter period of time. It's also not logarithmic. You could change that if you wanted to. Oh, this is logarithmic. Oh, it is logarithmic. I'm sorry, but it doesn't really show up because it's tight. Much more volatile, it looks like here.
Yeah.
You know, it's a whole different thing. And this is only a 10-day moving average, which isn't good. We really want to use a 50. But nonetheless, it shows you the volume on a daily basis. You see, the last couple day volume has been pretty impressive on those upticks.
Yeah, big time.
You know? And this is a stock that, you know, if it gets above, let's say, we'd have to see a pattern develop here a little bit better. I mean, this stock had great earnings when it came out, but they just sunk it because Italy was no longer giving subsidies, and a lot of Europe said they're not going to give subsidies. And that just sunk it in the middle of March there, or in the beginning of the middle of March. And if you can get past that kind of 30 point where we see a couple of tops there, you see how 30 has been hit a couple of times,
yep,
and it kind of comes
back
down
in October, and then
if you can get past there, I'd be really happy. Now, some people say, well, why would I wait to do that? It's like 5% over where it is now. Why would I wait? Why not just buy it now? Well, because you know what? You don't know if tomorrow all of a sudden the nuclear situation is going to be like old news, and then we're going to be back to reality here that solar nobody wants.
Yeah, and it should just sink back.
Yeah, so you have to be careful about that. The stock does have the ability, though, if you look at it, the low-lying area between November and January, and then it's the 200-day. It kind of respects that a bit. See that?
Mm-hmm.
That, so I look at both to see kind of what's happening on a longer-term basis and then a shorter-term basis, weekly and daily. Sometimes you look at monthly, but weekly and daily. Weekly first just to kind of get a big picture and then, you know, to see where the ranges are. And then the daily to find out maybe where the more refined breakpoints are, breaking out or breaking down.
Interesting. All right. So this stock looks like it has some potential.
I mean, the stock has great earnings power, and it actually scores very highly. We wrote about this recently. The problem was that it broke down way past our point of buying it, and we don't like to buy necessarily all the dips there. We want to see it, you know, besides a 1 or 2 day thing, we want to see a decent volume. We want to see the institutions buying it. We want to see it hold its head up for a little while and then break out. That's what we really want to find.
Hmm.
And then it can run. But right now, this is all news-driven. Just like put in the symbol CCJ. I think it's CCJ. Yeah, Cameco. That's kind of the opposite look.
CCJ.
Yeah, this is a Canadian uranium company.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm. It seems to have tremendous...
It looks like it fell off a cliff.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, a lot of people would like to buy this because, you know, but there's a saying, you don't want to buy, you know, catch a falling knife. Sometimes you do because the news is just, you know... the news is not what it seems sometimes, or they're buying it out of, you know, they're buying it for a trade, but there's a lot of volume there and the stock got smoked. I mean, down from 44 in mid-February down to what, 28 yesterday and today.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like it from the MACD here at the, which I assume that's what we're looking at the bottom.
Yeah.
Is
it's oversold.
Yeah.
But you got to wait for that to turn before you want to get back.
It doesn't look like it's going to turn. It looks like it's going to. It doesn't look good.
Right. I mean, it hasn't even. You know, it needs a few more days to rest to consolidate before you know, the next point. Right now is probably a short covering after, you know, yesterday's dip down. It was down 17% today. Then everybody got the hots for it and bought back into it. So you got to kind of watch that. All right. So anyway, you know, you got to watch those things on the charts. And the bottom line is that the solars were really hot, and they're very excited about them for, you know, the reasons that there may be an alternative here. But again, it's not like anybody's buying solars at this point. Nobody even talked about buying solars yet. They're just everybody's looking for an alternative.
Okay. So any other kinds of things that might be affected by this situation?
I mean, good and bad. I could see that high-end luxury items could be problematic.
Yeah, they seem to have been hit because the Japanese are big buyers of those things. Coach being – they're hugely popular.
Yeah, the car companies in Japan.
Yeah, the Prius is made in Japan. It's one of the Toyotas made in Japan and imported to the United States. That's one of the factories they had to shut down.
Mm-hmm. And there's a variety of other chips. Apple may have an issue coming up. We're going to have to see about this because already they stopped all shipments to Japan of the iPad 2, or they're not going to do it. First of all, you can look at it two ways. You could say, okay, they're not going to ship it because of the fact that, you know, they sold out so fast here. They sold whatever. What was the number? 600,000 the first day or week or so? And they're out, but there's also probably going to be an equipment or a supply issue coming right now. They're actually said they may postpone some more international sales.
Well, isn't the thing completely sourced out in China, and whatever happens in Japan shouldn't be affecting it?
I think you have chips, like some of the chips are made in Japan.
What?
Texas Instruments. I'm just telling you. We look it up, but there's some issues.
Okay. Well, I don't know what chip companies are in Japan anymore. I mean, I think Toshiba had some operations there. And they moved those. I think most of the stuff's been moved to China or Korea, but I could be wrong.
Toshiba got slammed too, because they operate some of these nuclear plants, I guess, and they really got just obliterated yesterday and the day before.
Oh, really? Yeah. Can we look at that chart on the?
I don't know if we could do that on. Let's see. Let's type in the symbol. I'm going to look up on the top here. Toshiba Corp. TOSBF maybe? Let's see. Yeah, that works.
TOS.
It may not TOSBF.
All one or no dot?
No, there's no dots. TOSBF on this one.
Okay, yeah, there it is.
So it went from 6
Whoa,
down to 4.
Nice.
Yeah, a little another waterfall there. This is some kind of ADR and some kind of reflection of what it is. This isn't really the trading, because if you look at it, it doesn't trade very much, but you know, it dropped from I would say what, 6.5 down to 5. 4.5, that's a pretty
4.5.
Nice little swath.
Yeah.
On big volume, too.
2 days.
Yeah. Now, what may be good, on the other hand, you know, you can look at things like possibly some cement makers, or maybe even some of the steel companies. One company we've been looking at is GGB. Now, I did some research on this. This is a Gerdau. They're out of Brazil. Now, I like them because they do specialize. This one and a company out of Russia, they specialize in reinforced steel, okay? And what that really means is rebar do they have. So the rebar, if they're going to rebuild in Japan in those areas, if they're going to, they're going to want reinforced concrete. Reinforced concrete comes from rebar being cemented in, right?
Yep.
So Gerdau does provide some of that, and I think that some investors are starting to pick up on that. But the volume was pretty light today, and it didn't really move that much, and it was down a bit. And so the other one is MTL. Again, it didn't move as much as I would hope it did. That's why we didn't buy them. Is Metchel Steel are out of Russia? Mm. But all these steel companies just got killed. Then you have things like even X, which is U.S. Steel.
Yeah.
Moved up yesterday, moved down today dramatically. And then finally, the one that specializes in cars in the steel area is AK Steel. You know, AK Steel was up 2% today. It was up a bit yesterday. But this is all panic buying of, you know, hoping for an idea to work.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I do think there's, but I mean, some of the companies that do, there's companies that do radiation style. Like Landauer, I think it's called. Let's see,
How about Caterpillar?
LDR. Yeah, they have their own. But look at LDR.
LDR.
This one has radiation sickness medicine or something of that nature. Or something. I forgot what the exact, but something to do with radiation.
Spiked up.
Yeah, they were all excited about that one, huh? Caterpillar, you know, Caterpillar will do well, but they have their own. I mean, they got, you know, Komatsu and a few other companies over there that can some, you know, why would they use ours?
Yeah. Well, maybe because they can't build enough of theirs at the moment.
Possibly. So anyway, lots
of
ideas.
All this damage is just on the coast. It's not like, you know, you go 40 miles inland that there's a, you know, the tsunami didn't do anything.
Right. And that was where the major damage came from, was obviously the tsunami.
Yeah.
So, you know, and now I tell you, the EU is now going to plan on stress tests for their nuclear plants. Now, I wonder.
It's ridiculous.
If they're going to really do a stress test.
I think it's because the word stress test has become like an in term. Let's stress test it.
Such a farce. Such a farce. You know, not to get back on my whole airport issue, but it's always too late. We have to take off our shoes when we go to the airport because that stupid shoe bomber. You can't have liquids on the planes because somebody did something with the liquids.
They didn't do anything. They just talked on the phone about it. That's the real irony to the liquids.
It's always after the fact, though. And the EU is going to do a stress test. Now, here's my question. If they're going to do a real stress test, isn't that kind of dangerous?
It would seem so.
I mean, you know, what kind of stress test are you going to do?
It's like the House episode yesterday on the on Fox. House came up with this idea. Well, what we have to do is we have to stress his heart, raise his blood pressure until something blows.
Right, right. Okay, sounds like a good idea. And it worked.
It did work, but it was like pretty risky because once it blew, it was like you had to seal it off and it was not easy.
Right.
So
So let me tell you a couple other things I want to mention to you. So Microsoft is – we need a timpani here, okay?
Yeah, I just wrote a column. Today's column on PC Magazine talked about the Zune – I call it the Zune swoon. And I analyzed the fact that Microsoft had screwed this thing up from the beginning. And even though it was – everybody who ever looked at it says a superior product, apparently that didn't help.
I had one, and you know what? This goes down to the very basic core of why, no pun intended here with Apple, but the core of why the Apple iPod was successful. It was not because it was such a great device, because it was okay. It was an MP3 player, right? There was other ones before it. It was all about the ability and the ease of getting the music and the information on and off of it through their iTunes interface. Did you ever see the Zune interface?
No, I never had a Zune. My son did. He liked it, but I don't know what he said about the interface. He would just download stuff.
Horrible. Horrible. I know the guys that worked. I said, what are you guys doing? I mean, this is so – not only is it not Microsoft, it was way out. Like somebody was had an acid trip, and they dreamed up this amazing, flowery, flowy kind of thing that was so hard to use and so unusable. Hmm. So, you know, it's back to the same thing. The Zune was a cool device, even though it was square. I bought the ugly chocolate brown one.
Oh, you did? That's a collector's item.
Oh, really? It's so ugly.
The colors they had, except for the brown one, were actually quite nice. We got a blue one. It was very. I thought it was a very attractive blue. The brown one, though, was a collector's item, and I think that had a lot to do with the failure of the device by making it brown, which left it open for ridicule.
Yeah,
you know, it looks like crap. It looks like crap. Hey, there, it's brown. Flush it. I mean, you're just asking for trouble, and I. Deconstructed the way Microsoft does business and figured that was just the way that nobody could say no to anybody because you get, you know, it's not the way the company operates. They don't really have any high – I mean, they have people yelling at each other, but they don't have genuine criticism or, you know.
They need to do like a GoDaddy advertising commercial campaign, you know. That would be helpful. Change their image a little bit.
Yeah, well, they're not going to do that, I can assure you.
No, I didn't think so. So I thought you'd be kind of – amused about this little stat here, that newspaper advertising in the U.S. has sunk to a 25-year low as more people are following things on the internet and using their, you know, portable devices and all that. And that's, I think, quite remarkable.
I think you missed a bigger story.
Oh?
Apparently, as of this week, the amount of people getting news from the internet versus newspapers has crossed over.
Really? Mm-hmm. I mean, why would I wait for tomorrow to get the news that already happened versus just turning on my computer and having my homepage be CNN or MSNBC or Fox or whatever it is?
Because maybe you want a little more than just superficial news.
So I read a newspaper for more than superficial?
Well, I don't know.
I like to read the same story from various sources because you know that when you add it all up and put it together, at least you could find the pros and the cons, because if you read one particular style of a writer style are always pushing the positive, one's on the negative, so you can kind of blend it a little bit.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and I, you know, newspapers, I read one newspaper. I read the Monday edition, which comes on Saturday early, of Investor's Business Daily every single weekend. That's the first thing I do, is go get that paper and I read it. My favorite. It's a little bit leaning to the right.
Yeah. No, I used to have a subscription to it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is slightly, it's very conservative, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I went out with, you know who started that? It was William O'Neill.
No.
And William O'Neill, he's pretty much a legend in the investment industry. And his son works with him. Nice fella, Scott. He's actually going to be on my podcast, The Disciplined Investor, this week. I had dinner with him about 2 weeks ago down at Joe's. Joe Stonecrab. Oh, that was fun.
I think you talked about this on the show already.
I may have. It was so much fun, I had to talk about it twice.
Yeah, stone crabs. Stone crabs.
They're not cheap stone crabs. I told you about that. Ridiculously
expensive.
Yeah,
you were complaining about the price.
Yeah, that's always
something. We don't get those. You're very rare to even see a stone crab in California. And I don't think anybody knows what they are. And
I'll send you some.
I don't need any. We get Dungeness crabs, which are much tastier.
Well, that's your opinion.
No, it's a fact.
It's a fact. Okay. Okay. From the palate of John. We were. I don't want to say let down. That's not what it is at all. It wasn't let down. But talk about the Day of Rage was last Friday, right? In Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And it turned out we have a new name for it in our office. We call it the Day of Yawn.
Yeah, it's like the Kohotek comet.
Yeah,
didn't really do anything.
Right, or Y2K for that matter.
Y2K, perfect.
Yeah, so it was Y2K of Saudi Arabia. And I think that probably it was done masterfully by the Saudi Arabian government, where there was some protest the day before and they decided, you know what, let's stop this in its tracks and go out and start shooting rubber bullets at people and throw tear gas at them. Maybe they'll think twice about coming out. And they did. Either that or they're all captivated about what happened in Japan, because there's another day of rage supposedly scheduled for March 20th.
Well, the situation in Bahrain seems to be more interesting.
Yeah, it seems to be heating up over there.
And now the Saudis think they're going to send people over there to help them police the place, which should be quite interesting to see what happens if the Saudis ever open fire on the Bahrainians.
Yeah. Or they'll just do what they did, is give out like $30 billion. Maybe they'll just give out $5 billion to to the people there and say, hey, you know what, go home, here's some money.
Yeah, well, I think that has a positive benefit. Because what are they going to do, overthrow the government and then do what?
Yeah, I mean, Singapore, they gave away billions and billions of dollars as a dividend, and that's right before the election. So listen, President Obama, if you want to send me, $15,000-$20,000, I'll think about voting for you.
Yeah, I'm in. You know? I won't think about it. I'll do it. $20,000, no problem.
It's a nice little sweetener to the idea. I mean, I don't know who they're going to run. He's going to run against anyway. At this point, it doesn't seem like there's anybody that is even close to stepping up to.
No, but Romney seems to be the guy they're going to try to push. But I don't think he has. You know, the guy who's the long shot possibility that could actually be a threat is this Chris Christie,
right? Well,
the fat blowhard from New Jersey.
Yeah, he says it like it is, or at least he says it.
Well, he just says it. I don't know whether it's like it is or not.
Right.
But he's a very entertaining straight shooter, it seems. I think he's he doesn't want to run, which is always, always means you're going to run. And he's just in the news too much to be ignored. So
right. Yeah, he's definitely out there.
He doesn't look like a healthy person, though. He's like a little too big.
You know what?
But William Taft was fat, so what?
Come on.
Harding, is.
There's plenty of fat people that are healthy. They're just overweight.
Yeah, well, he's overweight.
That's all. I mean, you can't look down on him. Maybe
I don't look down on him. I'm just saying, it's going to be interesting to see how he handles that girth.
You think? Well, let's move on. The there is a question that came in that I didn't answer, and somebody sent me an email, and let me just read it real quick and talk about it, because I think there's a question a lot of people may have, and it deals with from Brian. He says he manages his own trading account. He's wondering when you find that you've enjoyed an unrealized gain on a stock, and whether you're either long or short, or you want to maybe limit your potential losses in a stock, what factors guide the figure that you set a stop point? Is it a simple percentage calculation? Do you consider volatility, something else? Good question. First of all, you know, sell stops in terms of the idea of a sell stop is excellent. You know, you want to find a point that you want to buy it and a point that you want to sell it. Now, obviously, if a stock is running, you know, you let it run and you enjoy it. Now, for example, there's a stock that we have that we took some off of. We have a nice profit on it, but we took some off it today, 25%, you know, so that we can maintain our gains. The good news is we could always buy more back if we want to. There's no rule about either buying it back if I sell it or, you know, not worrying about it if we never buy it again. You know, if it's in the right place, the right time, the fundamentals are right and all that. But we don't like to use what's called hard stops. So if something comes down, like for example, the other day we had a buy order in for a stock at $3.20, and we just had a good till cancel. It hit, the buy order hit at 2:30 in the morning. I'm not sure how that happened, but we got a trade at 2:30 in the morning, and that was great because the stock went up to about 350. So, you know, a little bit of a profit, about an 8-9% profit on that. But the point is that you got to be careful because sometimes you'll get taken out. So you don't want to put in a hard stop all the time. But I would usually say that, you know, 8 to 10% downside or somewhere around there, and look for key support levels, whether it's the 50-day, the 20-day, the 200-day, or other points in the past that there was a lot of support where people would not let the stock go down below. That's a point where you want to say, okay, beyond that, I'm taking a piece out, and if it moves any further, I'm going to get out of all of it. And on the other side, if you have a substantial gain and you see the stock stalling and starting to move down, and if the market is not exactly in a rally mode, then you want to take some profits. And again, the major issue is the psyche behind it. Don't worry about if you sell it because it comes down and then buying it at a higher price. It's okay. It's okay to do that. You know, you're here to make money, not to be wrong or right. So hopefully that answers the question.
It answered it for me. I'm the one who asked. No, I
didn't. And for that, we'll send you a book, John.
Good stuff. So we have to look at our charts.
Yeah, let me head over.
As depressing as they are.
No. I don't think so. Well, maybe I pushed the wrong button.
Well, we talked about this before I started recording. Netflix.
Oh, that's kind of depressing.
Which is
the problem with Netflix is it's impossible. It's impossible to get it right.
Yeah, I mean, I know there are stocks like that, and apparently this is one of them, even though I took the challenge and shorted it. And somehow I got in at 195 when I think I should have gotten it at 210, but that's another story. And shorted it at 195, and of course it went up to 217, and I'm sitting on the sell spot.
Yeah.
But let's give it another day, I guess. And
yeah, well, we're going to take, you know, for that, we'll just, that moves very quickly. You know, Netflix was moving down and down and down and down. And lo and behold, I guess there's a gigantic fund that, you know, because a lot of Japanese people are going to be rebuilding, that they're going to require videos or something. I don't know. You know, because it's amazing how, you know, at this point we are seeing that.
Well, let's take a look at the chart on this one.
It's pretty ugly. I mean, from recently ugly. All right, let's go to Netflix over to Stock Charts, NFLX. By the way, you don't need you can get a subscription to Stock Charts to do a lot more stuff, but, you know, the bottom line is that you can do a lot of stuff for free.
What is it? NFLX?
I'm looking at FLX. So I'm looking at let's go to the weekly first. Let's kind of click over to the weekly and take a look. All right, so on the weekly chart.
Okay, I got it on 10.
Yeah, on the weekly chart. It's okay right now. On the weekly chart. We've clearly seen an uptrend here with a few blips down, then a drive up and a blip down, and a drive up, then a blip down. Netflix has a cult following. Let's just get that straight. And there's a variety of stocks that are like that and has a cult following. So what happens is that on both sides, by the way, short and long. So Netflix has been riding high. The valuation of this from every aspect is off the charts, and it really shouldn't be trading as high. But you know what? It is, so that's what it is. The stock starts peaking out. As a matter of fact, at about 240, there was a little – you see that little cross there at 240 on the weekly? You consider that a doji. In other words, there was indecision. It closed at the same place it started. There was congestion, and then it dropped down right after that from 240 down to about 200. That's a pretty significant move, right?
Yeah, that's not bad.
20%.
Yeah, or so.
So it moves down 20%. Now, all things being equal, it obviously could not get really below that 200 number. You see that. There's like four different places there that are stuck on the 200. Next drop would be down to about 180 approximately. That's where the next level would be. And for whatever reason, somebody came out with saying, hey, Netflix has a great opportunity. There was a big hubbub about Facebook, and they're going to take over on the videos and have streaming videos and Amazon, and everybody got all flustered. And then all of a sudden, everybody said, well, it's not that – they realized it's not that big of a deal. Facebook has one movie, and Amazon doesn't have that many movies. And, you know, so they got all excited about Netflix again. Now, if you look at a daily chart
– it's a nightmare.
Yeah, this is it's all over the place. You know, it spikes up from 180 to 210 in one day. It drives up to about 245 or so, or maybe even higher than that. And then it just starts drawing down. It falls below its 50-day average, which is clearly – and not only falls below it, way below it, which is clearly a sell signal. But if you notice all the way on the daily chart, the 50-day has been a clear support point for this stock. Every time it gets there, the institutions buy in. So, or, you know, right now we saw a gigantic volume on it today. It drove up by about 8% today. In the market sell-off the last few days, it really hasn't dropped that much. And when it did drop to about 190, which is, again, you could draw a line across. You could see a lot of points that is. It just couldn't get any below. So it was supported by the players that hold the stock. If you have billions of dollars and you have Netflix in your portfolio, what you want to do is that if it gets down to these levels – that becomes like a sell signal level, you want to start buying it and turning the shorts over. Remember, Netflix in particular has a high short ratio but a low float. There's not that many shares outstanding of this thing. So once it comes down and the shorts start pressing it, the longs are like, ha-ha, we're going to get you guys now. And they just slam the stock. They move it higher and the shorts freak out and move out of it.
It's a great – it's like a drama.
Yeah, it is. It makes people happy for a couple of days and sick for the rest of the time, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those things you probably want to stay away from. I think that's Netflix good advice.
It's a very difficult stock. I mean, it's been in a clear uptrend. There's no question about that, right?
Yeah,
but come on. I hear you.
It's bogus.
Yep.
But
so we got stopped out of, let's see, NetApp. I think we got stopped out of Las Vegas Sands. Is just getting killed. Glu Mobile, we got stopped out of.
Yeah, actually, the casinos are all going to get killed because the Japanese again are the big. It's like Coach,
right?
You know, the Japanese are the big gamblers. I mean, the Chinese are big gamblers, but the Japanese are right up there.
Right. Well, we're finally going to be out of our misery very shortly. Possibly by tomorrow with the yen, the short yen. It's right on the edge. I mean, an extra 10 cents is going to be pulled. So we look like we're going to finally be out of our misery there.
Yeah, that's another. That's terrible.
I got to look at Goldman Sachs. It may have hit a stop. I got to look what the high was on that and see if that hit. Albemarle, it went up nicely the last few days because Buffett bought a chemical-related company called Lubrizol. And that stock moved up 28%, and that followed along yesterday. Let's see here. WidePoint's been, you know, with the market moving down, some of these stocks moved down pretty hard. Alexion, we actually took a little piece off of Alexion. We made such nice profit on it that we pulled some of it. And let me say at this point, this is not a recommendation to buy or sell any security. We're just having fun with this, talking about different stocks and some ideas. And at the same time that if you want to buy a stock that we talk about, we may own the stock or clients may own the stock, and we do reference that. But more importantly, you should do your own research and realize that you could lose all or part of your money in any stock.
Yeah, like Netflix.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Metro PCS has been flying up very nicely.
Yeah, that was a good pick.
FedEx has been doing its thing, but of course got hurt a little bit with the high gas prices. Alcoa, which was up, I think, you know, we were off by 8 or 9%, came all the way in. Synaptics, we were losing on. It came all the way in. Qualcomm has just been sitting there. GM, you're doing great on still. They bought it today for some reason. Acme Packet has been vascillating back and forth. Cena's still up 17.5%. We took a little bit off of that. That was a very large position we had. We took some of that off the last couple of days. It actually started moving down today. Last few days, it bucked the trend pretty well. And let's see here. That's about all we have on here. I don't know if you have any ideas right now.
No, we are
not adding anything to the portfolios right now. Next week, you know, one of the stocks we had before was Zag. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Zag came out with earnings, and the earnings looked okay, and they said that they have massive amounts of potential you know, things they've sold. They don't only do the Apple deal, because Apple has their own case right now, but the stock is in the toity. Not looking good, the stock.
Yeah, well.
So it is an interesting play, because there was another – the two – there's only two analysts that follow it, raised their price target to $12.75.
What is the symbol?
ZAGG.
That's handy. So they raised it to $12.75, and the thing's sitting, what, at $7.38?
Yep, down 9% the day after it came out with earnings. It's moving. It was as low as like 690 or so, 678 here, as high as 750. And, you know, there's no love affair with it because there's a concern that I still, you know, the fundamentals are still really solid. But there's no love affair because of the fact that, you know, Apple has a product now. But I still don't see that really affecting that terribly. But what can I say? That's
I'm
my
looking
take
at the MACD, and maybe when it flips over, when the black line goes over the red line, it might.
It could be. I mean, the fact is that, you know, you want to wait. You know, we would like to see the stock, you know, get supported here somewhere or somewhere around here. You know, right now you're in a distribution phase of the markets. We talked about that. So, you know, I'm looking at right now the, what am I looking at here? The daily here, and you know, you're that 650 line seems to have some support there, but you could close your gap down to about 550 on this one is possible if there's no support. And it's clearly in a downtrend right now. There's no question about that from when it hit 10 and change a month ago. So, you know, you got to be careful with this. This is the kind of stock where, you know, you see that gigantic spike down and you have to say, you know what, there's something behind this that we may be concerned about. Then you see earnings coming out and then there's really no relief from the fact that they had good earnings. So people are a little bit cold on this stock right now. So that's a big concern.
That's interesting. They have a little RSI thing at the top, which is kind of always been kind of a weird indicator. That's
We're not really fans.
No, but it doesn't do any. I mean, it's interesting to look at, and it's one of those indicators that, in hindsight, you can kind of reinterpret things and say, "Oh, look," but you can never use it in real time.
Yeah, the indicators we don't like. We think that's. I mean, most indicators. There's some that we like. There's some algorithms of indicators in terms of trends we like. But generally speaking, the trend lines are the best. The directional movements, you know, in terms of is you know, simply is it moving up or down? The direction of the 50-day, the direction of the 20-day, direction of the 200-day. And then, you know, again, there's about four or five other ones that I really like. But generally speaking, you got to be really, I think, careful about that. I thought what we'd do just for a moment in closing here is just check in with the markets around the world and see what's happening here, right? Because we saw that gigantic move down on markets in the Asian region. And then we saw this tremendous move up, of course, when it comes to the markets today. We saw Japan actually move up dramatically. It was up, it says it's up 22. Let me just look at this for a second. Let me go over to the live one. It was up 6.5% tonight for a little while there when it first opened the Nikkei. The Nikkei is up 4.37%, and I think they're about to open up the afternoon session right now. Hang Seng is down. China is flat, and the Australia market is only up about 68 bips, and our stock futures have just moved down. You know, they're looking for more of a maybe a 6, 7, 8% level. You know, of a return on the Japanese markets, it looked like, and it just didn't seem to play out here. And there's still problems. You know, the smoke is still coming up from the Fukushima, whatever that's called, the plant. And you know, that happened today, and it's you know, still there's a lot of problems there.
Yep.
So we're going to see what happens when Taiwan is open. They're up about 0.75%. Like I said, Hang Seng's down ever so slightly. We'll see. I mean, how this plays out. That, you know, it fell very dramatically over the last couple of days, and I would venture to say there's a little bit more work to do on the downside. 1275 at the S&P is the number that you need to watch. That's a big number. That's the number that's the port range right now in the S&P. So right now we're at 1281. We closed at.
What's
so about
the next floor off below that?
The next floor, let me take a look at the chart. I think it's 1250. 1250, there's a support line. Then it goes down to actually more like 1223. Because you're below the 50-day moving average right now. 1223 is the next point that has some support there. Let me look over here what this is. This is 1217. Yeah, about 1220 after that, which is not funny. That's a lot of move. We've already off from about 1350, so we're off 770 points already, which is, you know, about 5%. So we'll have to see how that plays out. And let me just look at our futures. Our futures are flat, but the fair value. So the futures a little bit down right now. And gold is up, of course. Oil's down a little bit. It was up earlier. And the NASDAQ futures are definitely off. So we'll see how that plays out. We took down our portfolio down to about a 25% position for our trading account. And our other accounts have bonds and all that, which actually did very well today, the bond portfolio. So, you know, when we mix it up and diversify it. So that's the story.
All right. Well, then we'll talk again next Tuesday, and hopefully things will pick up.
All right. And give till it hurts for the Jason Taylor Foundation. Thank you so much.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.